Fancy a game?
Technically correct.
Forget all that formal crap about coming at me one at a time. I'll take all you bitches on.
With Tyler Bischoff.
His math's way off.
On ESPN Las Vegas.
The next two words out of your mouth aren't see ya, then the third word will be, oh my God, my crotch, you've punched me in the crotch.
Hello, Vegas Golden Cowboys. They won. It was actually a boring game in the sense that it was just a normal regular season game where the Golden Knights crushed their opponent in a home game. Like, not much happened. Like, there were a few hits, but there's a few hits in every hockey game. There's nothing really special that happened in this one. The Sharks kind of suck. But the important part...
Yeah, they kind of suck whenever... What, Kane is suspended and...
Erik Karlsson is not there.
Yeah.
But the important part...
I don't think this team's as good without two of their better players.
...is the pregame show.
Oh, my God.
I am severely disappointed in the Golden Knights pregame show. So much excitement, but so little delivery for the Golden Knights and their pregame ceremony. The main issue, the main reason that I am disappointed is it was not specific... to the Sharks. Like, there may have been some hidden detail that I missed or something that they called back to that I missed, but this was very much a generic pregame open that they will probably use for, you know, half the season and then make some adjustments later on. They didn't do a special one for opening night, which is what I was hoping they would do. They haven't done a special one for individual regular season games. They've only done special ones during the playoffs. They've just had generic ones. So that was my biggest disappointment, and that's probably my own fault because I expected something that they were probably never going to do. But I was hoping it was going to be specific to the Sharks and the rivalry and the game, the seven-game series last year.
So in theory, what you're saying is there's going to be a version of that exact same open where instead when he pulls down or pulls up the handkerchief over his face, there isn't a Sharks logo on it. It'll just be plain?
No, it'll be the other team that they play.
Oh, okay.
When they play the next home game, it'll be a Bruins logo. It's just like they did in year one and year two, where year one it was the guy skates out onto the ice as the hooded figure, and he just had the flag of whatever team they were playing that night. Disappointed in that aspect of it.
It's more individualized than... It's just a... I would say it's less generic than it could be.
How could it be any less generic?
He has no logo.
Right, that's not generic at all.
All right, fine.
They'll just change that. I wanted specific call-outs to the series against the Sharks.
You wanted him on an iceberg that he made with his magic, fighting a shark, stabbing a shark.
Yeah, a shark in there. They didn't even put a shark in there. It's just a Sharks logo at one
point. Shirtless with a two-handed axe fighting a giant clown.
Yes, exactly. It would have been terrific. They didn't do that. Now,
Ryan Reeves in an apron with a tray full of muffins that he then uses to beat the crap out of somebody.
Wonderful. Now, the actual show that they did do, the highlight of it, the best part, is Derek Englund, Nate Schmidt, Marc-Andre Fleury, and William Karlsson are Cowboys. They've got bandanas. They've got they each get a dramatic shot of them putting on a hat, right? It is the highlight of the video. Superb. I want more of them, though, as Cowboys in the video, because they basically just showed the four of them put on a hat, and then that was it. And it was like stunt doubles riding the actual horses in the rest of the video. I want more of that. That was the best part, was those four involved. Like, give me them like acting or something. Like, give me more of the four players doing something. That would be terrific.
What this town needs more than anything is more Derek Englund acting.
That's fine. That's fine. This could be Derek Englund's best role.
Person.
This could be Derek Englund's best role for the team. So that's the best part. But there are some major flaws with this. My biggest problem is the way this video starts. The Golden Knight walks into a cave. And apparently he's going to take a nap. I don't really know. I was a little confused. He's just wandering into a cave to take a nap.
He's tired.
And he sets his sword down outside.
He should have let Subban play more.
Sets his sword down outside the cave. This is the golden sword. Remember year one, every night he had to come pull that thing out of the stone, right? He was the only one that could do it. Everybody else had to bow down to him because he possessed the golden sword. So he goes to take a nap in a cave and he just leaves the thing sitting outside the cave. He doesn't take it in with him. He just leaves it outside of this random cave in the middle of the desert. What are you doing? It's the most valuable possession you have. The only possession you have is a golden knight. And you just leave it outside the cave? And of course, somebody comes up and steals it. You deserve to have it stolen. It's ridiculous. You just set, like, he treated it like you stepped in dog poop and you hosed your shoes off and you got to set him outside to dry before you bring him in the house. That's how he treated this sword. And it's the golden sword. That is the most preposterous thing about this video. Is that the golden knight.
That's the most
No. We'll get to the rest of it. That's the most ridiculous thing about this video. This is the most prized possession, and he just set it outside of a cave and went and took a nap. That's ridiculous. That is the premise of the entire video. They have to go get the sword back. Why do they have to go get it back? Because he left it outside of a cave. It's ridiculous. Now, the other part of that is the Golden Knight's an employee of the Golden Knights. Why the hell is he napping in a cave?
I mean, maybe he's like a member of Reno's USL team.
Golden Knights.
Well, maybe he doesn't get paid. Maybe he just gets room and board.
In a cave?
That's all they have.
What, are they two up against the cap? They can't afford to pay the Golden Knight anything?
Would have it been better had he been going up to, like, the top, the penthouse of, like, Red Rocks?
Yes, it would have been much better.
He leaves the sword out by the used room service tray.
Yes, much better. Much better, but he's just going to randomly nap in a cave. Come on, Bill Foley. Let's pay the Golden Knight. Let's get him an apartment somewhere. So, Golden Knight's napping in a cave for some reason. We don't know why he's tired, and he just leaves his sword outside. And that brings us to the most hilarious part of the pregame show, is that this takes place in three different time periods. We have a Golden Knight who is in the King Arthur realm, is what you're supposed to be thinking there, which is like the 5th century. We have Bill Foley for a second straight year flying on a helicopter, giving orders, which would imply that that is 2019 because he has a freaking helicopter. And they introduced cowboys.
And they didn't animate him as a younger Bill Foley.
That too. So we have medieval knights, Wild West cowboys, and present day helicopters all in the same video, all happening at the same time as well. Because the people that steal the sword are just random cowboys. And then they go sit around a little campfire, and they're just looking out like, ooh, look at this sword we found outside of a cave.
One of them had an impressive mustache.
And then all of a sudden you see the four golden knights hop on their horses with their hats, and then stunt doubles ride in and chase them into a barn. And then that's the other thing. The golden knight is just randomly chilling in a barn. How did he get there? Why didn't he just go take the sword from them? We have different time periods. The different time periods, I can live with that. That doesn't bother me so much. Like, it is ridiculous. It's supposed to be a ridiculous video. The part that bothers me is the premise of how they lost the frickin' sword is the Golden Knight. He should be fired. The Golden Knight should be fired.
Okay, he's the only one who can get it out of the stone if it ever winds up back in the stone.
I don't care. He's fired.
He shouldn't be fired. He should be, you know, like on contract work.
Change the name
you
of the team.
You bring him back if...
That's... You named your team after... You named your team after that guy and changed the name of the team. Get a new mascot.
Okay, question. He's giving orders while in a helicopter, and then he calls on four cowboys.
Yes.
Who we have to assume have some sort of radio, because they're getting orders.
They could just be following the helicopter, because they're cowboys and they've never seen a helicopter before.
They're just confused.
Yes.
But they chase them into the barn, and they're like, good enough.
Yeah, they just stop outside the barn. It was a trap. They chased them there because they knew the Golden Knight was going to... I don't know. It was a very elaborate plan to just have the Golden Knight waiting without a sword to beat somebody up.
The cowboy in the barn drops the sword, and so we know that the Golden Knight has some low-level ice powers.
Yes, right? He can break ice. He can make ice melt.
And he either has a bunch of strength or whatever it was that got him to pull a sword out of a stone.
I think that's the bloodline.
Oh, okay. Is he a Jedi, though?
So, like, yeah, in this video, the guy who stole the sword runs into a barn. He runs into the Golden Knight, drops the sword, so it's laying on the ground, and the Golden Knight makes it levitate off the ground into his hand. And, again, very important question. What kind of powers does the Golden Knight have, and why has he not been using them to their full extent? Why has he been participating in these wimpy little sword fights when he can just make things levitate and make ice melt?
Yeah.
And these, also, these like, fights should be over in an instant.
Also, guy steals your sword. If you can, like, get the sword to return to you, this shouldn't have even involved
right,
cowboys.
Exactly. Exactly. You should have just come flying out of the guy's hand to your back to your cave. Then you could leave that thing wherever you want.
Maybe
just
that,
make it come back to you.
I just solved your issue. He's like, I can get it back to me. The issue was him napping on the job.
That's true. That is true. He fell asleep. All right. One little bit on the actual game. Cody Glass.
Oh, no. I still want to talk about the fact that during the sword fight.
Sword fight was lame. Wasn't a good sword
he
fight.
He didn't have his sword out.
Wasn't a good sword fight. The
what
first
was the
year,
point of going and getting the sword, and then you're just going to use magic whip or whatever?
And the shield. Got to use the shield.
Well, he was using the shield for defense, yeah. But then he would, like, conjure magic and hit him, and it's like, you have the...
You have to have the sword to conjure the magic.
Okay, but the sword's maybe. Got, I assume, got a pointy end, and that guy's got an axe and no shield.
Maybe. We'll see. The magic is way better than a sword.
It seemed to be less effective.
Magic is way better than a sword. Now, the actual game. Cody Glass scored a goal in his NHL debut. His first shot on goal was a goal. That's a little bit misleading because he had two shots not on goal. It's kind of like giving Michael Jordan credit for winning the finals every year, even though he didn't make the finals every year. It's kind of like that because he just completely missed the goal, so it doesn't count as a shot in the NHL. Great setup from Mark Stone and Max Pacioretty to a wide-open Cody Glass for the goal. It's exactly what you want that line to do for Glass. Make him look good. Make his life easy. What is interesting, though, the second line, they were by far the worst line in that game for the Golden Knights. At 5-on-5, they were outshot 10-5. They were the only line for the Golden Knights that had a negative expected goals for in the game. That line created 3 scoring chances and allowed 6. The Sharks had 9 total scoring chances at 5-on-5. So Stone, Pacioretty, and Glass gave up the 6 of the 9 Sharks scoring chances at 5-on-5. Glass scored. The Golden Knights dominated the Sharks, but I think we are a long way from saying that that line works or that Cody Glass is a top six or just even middle six center in the NHL. He scored early in the second period. Prior to that, they were pretty much useless. In the first period, that line recorded 1 shot, and it wasn't on goal. An entire period of Stone and Pacioretty, and they could only get 1 shot. Very small sample size, but like basically Cody Glass scoring a goal and the Golden Knights dominating that game saved Cody Glass. Because if he doesn't score and that game finishes 2-1 to either team or something like that, I don't think many people are pleased or happy with Cody Glass's debut because they were the worst line on the ice for the Golden Knights. Now, granted, worst line on the ice when you dominate a team is still pretty good, but wasn't a great debut from Cody Glass aside from the goal that he scored.
I'm just waiting. Can I play the goal?
Here's Jesus Lopez, the Spanish goal call for Cody Glass.
Lleva a Mark Stone en un costado. Del otro lado está Cody Glass. No conectan con él. Se suelta el puck. Recupera el equipo de Vegas Golden Knights. Ese es Pacioretty. Costado izquierdo. El pase. ¡Gol! ¡Gol! ¡Golazo de Cody Glass! Allí está el novato. Haciendo de las suyas. Una excelente jugada. Muy bien triangulada.
So there was Jesus Lopez calling Cody Glass's debut goal. Carlo works. I don't know Carlo's last name. Does Carlo have a last name?
I assume he does, but his title is Senior Executive of Graphics for Technically Correct.
Yeah, it doesn't pay. So
it's an honorary
He
title.
Tweeted at us a detail that we might have missed. The people that stole the sword, the Cowboys that stole the sword, were wearing a shirt that is black with white pinstripes. Possibly a small nod to referees stealing the game from the Golden Knights, stealing the season from the Golden Knights last year.
There's more art direction here than I originally assumed.
Oh, I'm sure there is. Like, I'm sure there's details like that we missed. That
because
being said,
I just assumed like someone in the production department played too much Red Dead Redemption over the weekend and was like, guys, I got the idea. And they're like, but Foley's going to want a helicopter. That's fine. Throw it in.
If this is the case, that the Cowboys that stole the sword were indeed supposed to be the referees stealing the season from the Golden Knights. A, that's very good. But B, it goes back to the Golden Knight napping on the job. That's the only reason it was allowed to happen, because the Golden Knights went to sleep on a damn penalty kill. Definitely correct. Brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Place your bets at the Orleans Casino Race and Sportsbook all season long. Every Monday night, Bourbon Street Lounge will host football viewing parties with giveaways, including jerseys. It's Technically Correct, brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
Check out the podcast on lvsportsnetwork.com.
Visit the Orleans Casino Race and Sportsbook all season long. Football enthusiasts can catch this year's games with a Monday night viewing party at Bourbon Street Lounge, with giveaways throughout the game, including jerseys. Plus, you can play Las Vegas' longest-running free football contest with $30,000 in guaranteed cash prizes each week. Or place your bets from your phone or tablet with the Be Connected Sports app. Download it at BeConnectedSports.com. Boyd Gaming has you covered for football season.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
Nate Schmidt left last night's game with a left leg injury.
They said
which leg it was?
No, they did not say anything, but you could see which leg it was.
So it'll be lower body on the injury report.
Yes, injury report. They don't do those. What are you talking about? Probably the most important part of that game is Nate Schmidt. It was a knee-to-knee type collision with Logan Couture. Schmidt stayed down for like 10 seconds. They didn't blow the play dead because the NHL refs don't have to blow a play dead for a hurt player unless it's a head injury. If it's not a head injury, they just use their discretion as to whether they think it's serious or not. They didn't think it was serious, but they didn't blow the play dead, and the Golden Knights trainer jumped on the ice while play was still happening.
As you do.
And then had to scurry back to the bench. So
too many men.
Honestly, it technically should have been a penalty against the Golden Knights because the trainer just jumped on the ice during play. But pending the severity here, Nate Schmidt is probably one of the least expendable players on the roster. You'd put Fleury, Schmidt, Carlson, and I guess Mark Stone is probably your top four. Because you could probably replace any other defenseman besides Schmidt. Shea Theodore, if he was out, you'd lose some power play ability there. What are you talking about?
Speed.
They don't play the same position.
Okay. Oh, I thought you were just saying, like, overall replaceable people. Never mind. I got to pay attention when you talk.
Any other wingers replaceable to an extent. I mean, if Marchessault, Smith, Pacioretty go down, like you can throw in Peary or Zekov and you'll survive there. Stone, if you lost him for the whole season, it'd be tough. If you lost Stone for 10 games, you'd survive. It wouldn't be that big of a deal. But Nate Schmidt, he's the number one defenseman. He plays on the power play and the penalty kill. You don't have anybody else that can fill in that role easily. Shea Theodore played every single minute of a power play once Nate Schmidt went down. I was hoping that he would go to five forwards on a power play at one point because that's better than throwing out Holden or Merrill or England for power play time, but he just played Shea Theodore for an entire 2-minute power play. But with the defensemen, if you're missing Nate Schmidt for any period of time, you could load up the top pair with Braden McNabb and Shea Theodore. Those are your two best defensemen. Make that your top pair and play them as much as possible. But then your other four defensemen are John Merrill, Nick Holden, Derek Englund, and a rookie, which is kind of terrifying to think about, that that's going to be your four, that they're going to have to play a decent chunk of any game. And one other point, if you remember last year, Nate Schmidt suspended first 20 games of the year. The Golden Knights had the second worst record in hockey over those 20 games. I don't think you can say it was 100% Nate Schmidt, but I do think Nate Schmidt had a good reason to do with that. So if he's out for a long period of time and they're that bad again, it could be questionable as to how easily they get into the playoffs this year.
Is there any benefit of putting Shea Theodore with, like, the rookie?
Yeah, and
in order
that's,
to, like, hey, you're going to have to make up for a lot of their bleep-ups.
What I'm curious is to, as far as how they handle Nate Schmidt being out, because, again, you can load up the top pair with McNabb and Theodore, and that's your best two defensemen, but you could also spread it out, and you could play McNabb with, you know, I don't know who you play him with, Merrill or Shea Theodore with a rookie. Depends on which rookie you want to put in there, because Nate Schmidt's right-handed. The only rookie right-handed defenseman is Dylan Coghlan. Now, they'll play other guys on the right, but Dylan Coghlan's the only right-handed one. So if they call him up, Coghlan might play with McNabb and might play a lot of minutes. If they don't call him up and they rely on Nick Hague, Hague can play both sides conceivably, but he's left-handed. So we'll see.
The San Jose Sharks were 0-5 on the power play.
The Golden Knights penalty kill was so good last night that it had to hurt. They killed off every penalty easily. I mean, it was 7 minutes of power play time for the Sharks in that game. They had 9 shots, total shots, not shots on goal, just 9 total shots. The Golden Knights shorthanded had 3, and they ended up scoring the only goal during a Sharks power play. So, like, it was so good it had to hurt. Because last season, your season ends because you give up 4 goals on a 5-minute penalty kill. Like, if you were anything close to as good as they were last night, the Golden Knights kill off that 5-minute major, maybe they give up 1 goal and they're still up 3-1 with whatever that would have been, 5 minutes to play. Like, it's no problem whatsoever. So, like, as good as the penalty kill was last night, it has to hurt based on the way last season ended and the fact that they couldn't just stop the Sharks from scoring 4 times. Like, you just give up 2, you win that game. You give up 3, you probably win that game. But they gave up 4.
I think I gave that enough time for people to get mad. Like, I felt like it needed a rest.
I thought you were trying to think of something to say and couldn't think of anything to say, so you did the wise thing and just went to the next brief.
No, I was like, man, people are going to be mad about that. Also, I looked over to see if I had He's In Alone, but I didn't have it queued up.
That wasn't during power play.
But I just, I like to antagonize people. The Raiders
Has to make sense. I like to antagonize people too, but it's got to make sense.
Nope, volume. Got to go for volume.
That's why this show is terrible.
Fair. The Raiders have purchased land for parking near the stadium.
The Review Journal reporting that the Raiders have paid $28 million for 17 acres of land. It is close to Tropicana and Valley View. According to Google Maps, that's approximately a mile away you're walking from the stadium. So it is walkable. It should be pretty useful. The only problem with it is it's only going to provide 2,700 more spots. So on site, the Raiders have just over 2,700. Now they're adding another 2,700 that are walkable. They have to have 1,600 spots to meet Clark County's requirements. That does include the satellite lots that they'll be like 6 miles away that you park and shuttle from. So they'll be fine getting to that number, but it's not going to be 1,600 spots that are in walkable distance that the Raiders control. I would say this. The parking spots that are walking distance to the stadium, like having enough parking that's walkable to the stadium, is not so much a big deal for Raider games as much as it is for all other events that are going to be there. Because Raider games are going to be, you're going to have 8 home games a year. People are not going to have a problem throwing away their entire Sunday to go to these games. So parking 5 miles away, hopping on a shuttle, and riding into the stadium. People are going to do that for Raiders games. The problem is for, like, concerts that are there or UNLV football games or whatever, like, not many people are going to want to park, pay to park, ride a shuttle in for UNLV football. Not many people are going to want to do that for concerts either. Like, if there was a concert you wanted to go to at T-Mobile and I said, hey, yeah, you got to park down by the South Outlet Malls off of the I-15, hop on a shuttle and ride down to T-Mobile, it's probably going to deter a lot of people from going to those concerts. So Raiders games will be fine. It's the other events that are there that are like, it's just a long hassle just to get to that stadium. I'm not going to go. So getting more and more parking, just buy Bally High. Just buy Bally High, build a freaking pedestrian bridge, and everything's good to go.
Who at this point are you even buying Bally High from?
I'm not sure. That guy's in jail still.
Send a giant check to jail. The FAA is investigating Lights FC's helicopter cash drop.
The team is apparently not going to be in trouble, but the helicopter pilot could lose his license, according to the Review Journal. So, if you're unaware, they've done this both seasons. They have a helicopter come out for one of their games, and at halftime, it flies right above the field and drops money for fans to run around and grab. It's terrific and dangerous. And the FAA is apparently investigating the pilot to see if he followed the proper safety protocols here. Of course, the team is not in trouble, the pilot, though. The beautiful part of this, though, is Brett Lashbrook's quote in the RJ. He said, Brett Lashbrook, the owner of Lights FC, he said, "We got 52 seconds on SportsCenter about it. The NHL can't even get 52 seconds on SportsCenter some nights. This was unbelievable. We had a player from Mexico that said his parents saw it on the Mexican news. My wife is originally from Russia, and her dad called saying, I think Brett's team is on the Russian national news. That got us so much publicity." So, first off, he takes a shot at the sport of hockey. Terrific work there. Second off, though, this pilot could potentially lose his license to fly And Brett Lashberg is like, yeah, we were on TV across the world. This was wonderful for us. We'll just find another pilot to screw over next year.
Good God.
Totally correct. We got a new sponsor on board, Michael E. Menden Diamond Jewelers in the Fashion Show Mall. If you aren't buying your diamonds and jewelry from Menden Jewelers, for sure you are paying too much and getting poor quality. Always shop Michael E. Menden and get real quality for the lowest prices. Right now, receive two tickets to see Journey or Gwen Stefani with any purchase over $299. This is the best jeweler. Don't go anywhere else. For quality, trust, and value, join the rest of Las Vegas and let Michael E. Menden become your jeweler.
So have you taken the lady by? Like, not, you don't even have to like be like, look, there's a jeweler. Which one would you want if someone were to do that?
Someone?
Okay, if I were to even do that, you know, I would never, like, oh, I'm not even interested. You know, you got to play it off. But, you know.
I'm definitely not taking dating advice from you or engagement advice from you.
That's fair.
Get in touch with the show on Twitter at @Bischoff_Tyler. Time to get an update from the sports book with Bob Scucci.
How many extra points is Gardner Minshew's mustache worth?
I'm giving it 2.5 points. I really like it, and I'm a big Minshew fan.
Brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
Bob Scucci joins us. How big was the handle for the Golden Knights game against the Sharks last night?
It was pretty big. Obviously, the biggest hockey game on the betting board, and probably about as big as the baseball games.
How big of a favorite did the Golden Knights get to last night?
I saw it like $1.50, $1.60. They crept up there.
Are you, for this team, are you anticipating having to make them big favorites the whole season just to try to get any money on the other team?
Oh, absolutely. We've got them the favorites to win the whole thing this year. So, and talking to some other bookmakers around town, they're just really high on them this year. And I was fortunate enough to be at that game last night, and just to see the excitement around the first game and the energy in the arena, they look pretty good. So I think everyone's excited about this team this year.
Were you sitting in there watching it, trying to think of ways to get in-game prop bets up right away?
There wasn't time. I tell you, they scored two goals just right out of the gate. I wouldn't have had time to put those props in by the time they were up 2-0. I think about that all the time.
Do you know what did the line go to when the Golden Knights went up 2-0 for in-game wagering?
They were about a 7-1 favorite.
Okay.
So I think it could have gotten 5-1 on the Sharks. So they went up pretty high.
I got a tweet for you to ask you about. This is from the real Mr. ACL on Twitter. He said, just spoke with a guy who had two separate bets on Tigers under 68.5 wins for $2,500 each. The Tigers finished with 47 wins, but only played 161 games. Both of the books he placed the bets require 162 games for action. First off, do you guys require 162 to cash win total bets?
No, we set a lower total on that. So every operator has a certain amount of games that need to be played, and some of them require the entire season, and some of them pick a lower number. But I guess you just got to refer to each operator's house rules. I understand it if the house rules require 162 games, it's a bad beat, and the operator may want to consider some sort of customer appeasement if it's kind of reasonable amounts. But those are the situations we run into all the time.
Is there any way you could foresee as more pro sports leagues sort of get into sports gambling and start accepting it and being a part of it, is there any way you could see the Tigers playing a makeup game that has no bearing whatsoever on the standings, but simply to get to 162 so that they meet sportsbook requirements?
Yeah, I can't see that happening, but I could see a point at some time when the leagues may want to let them play the game so that players can meet certain individual goals. You know, like imagine if somebody was one home run away from tying the home run record, and they didn't play that one game. I think the league would probably want to make a concession there and say, let him play the game and see if he gets the home run.
I don't feel like baseball is quite as heavy with incentives in their contracts as, say, maybe football is. But, like, if you're a player and you're close to some sort of incentive at the end of the year and you're just not playing 162 games because it doesn't matter in the standings, that's got to piss you off too.
Oh, absolutely. I think you're going to see a lot of kind of changes in the way the leagues handle a lot of these games. We've already seen it in the last couple of years. I don't know that the betting part of it plays too much of a part, but certainly fantasy has shifted the way the leagues approach the game. I mean, they want to see higher scoring. They want to see players reach these milestones. So I foresee kind of something expanding in the future.
I feel like Tampa and Oakland are two of the less popular teams to bet on. So was the handle for last night's wild card game significantly lower from the NL wild card game?
Yeah, for sure. There was tremendous action on the Milwaukee game, but last night's not much at all. But I think the Sharks and the Golden Knights kind of overshadowed the day.
Are for Major League Baseball playoffs, like the series prices you have up for these, is everybody taking the favorites, or are any of the underdogs getting bet on heavily?
Not yet. It's all just the favorites. At least with us, you know, still just a lot of support for Houston and the Dodgers, of course. And I think we may see a little action on St. Louis because they're really not a big underdog. So and kind of Atlanta's been flying under the radar for most of the year, as good as they've been and everything. They're just not getting the support. So I could see that one getting a little bit more two-way action.
What type of odds are you giving me that Kershaw blows a crucial game?
I'm making that probably about a 3-1 underdog. I think I don't think he's going to blow one this year. I think this is the year.
This will be the year.
Look at this confidence. So where is this confidence coming from?
Yeah, no, I think everyone kind of wants to see Dodgers, Yankees, and I don't know. At least that's just from the people that I've spoken to around town.
Now, if we look at the NFL, the Raiders are in London. They're taking on the Bears. Are there any trends with the games in London? Like, they always go under, they always go over.
Blake Bortles is good.
Yeah, Blake Bortles throws for a ton of yards. Are there any trends in these games?
No, not yet. It seems like initially when they started playing these games that one team seemed to be taking the game a lot more lightly than another team, but you can't predict which one that is. You know, we got a couple of blowouts the first few times they played these games in London, and then of course you always have to wonder about field conditions and things like that. But I don't see a significant trend yet. But this is, you know, it's drawing a lot of interest in this game. Oakland, because they're coming here to Las Vegas, so a lot of local interest in the Raiders, even though they, only won two games. At least they've been competitive, and at least last week they came up with a big win. And then on, you know, Chicago came into the year really with high expectations. You know, nobody liked the way their season ended last year, so there was a lot of high hopes for them. But of course, Mitch Trubisky goes out, and now they're looking at Chase Daniel. So we're sitting at Chicago -5.5 on the game. We got some initial Oakland money, and now it's kind of being driven back up to the 5.5. So pretty decent two-way action here.
Is losing Mitch Trubisky and going to Chase Daniel, does that even have a significant impact on the spread?
It does in a sense. I mean, not that we had Mitch Trubisky rated as a top-tier quarterback like a Tom Brady or an Aaron Rodgers, but certainly there was a pretty big drop down, and just the way their offense had been, even with Trubisky in, they're just offense can't seem to get anything going, and they're winning games kind of relying on their defense. You know, putting up 16 points last week wasn't very impressive, although, you know, it was against what was considered to be a decent Vikings team. So this should be an interesting one. I think Oakland's actually a live dog in this game, so you know, we'll see what happens.
Please just tell me that Khalil Mack is worth more to the spread than Mitch Trubisky is.
I'm saying yes.
It may
be the first time since. Yeah, there's very, very few times that a defensive player is worth more to the team than a skilled position player. But in this case, yes.
Is, like, as far as defensive players go, is it Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald? Are those the only two that you would say, oh, that'll impact the line if they're actually out?
Yeah, I mean, those are the only two that can really affect the line. In other situations, when you have like a key defensive player out, it's usually in combination with several players. So, you know, if a real good all-pro safety is out, as well as their cornerback, you know, then that may make a difference, because now you've got kind of that whole secondary that's depleted. But in terms of just one single player, just those two guys really can make an impact.
Are you required to give anyone who bets Bengals and Cardinals the line for having a gambling addiction?
We're not, but you know, anyone that wants to bet the Bengals, I'm inclined to give them a free buffet.
You heard it here first,
yes. this is what we call the corner TV game. You know, the TV that's in the corner of the sports book.
You got the wavy lines on it.
Yeah, exactly. neither one of these teams has a win yet, although, you know, Arizona did tie that first game of the year against Detroit, which kind of looked kind of impressive coming out, and they were competitive against the Ravens as real big double-digit underdogs. But then they came out last week and just weren't competitive at all. And of course, Cincinnati just keeps looking worse and worse. After the first game, when they almost beat Seattle and probably should have won the game, they lost 21-20. And it seemed that they would be competitive, and then they just lose the next three straight to not very good teams.
What is the line for Boise State at UNLV, and why is it not 50 points?
Yeah, we might be going up quick. It's 23 right now. We should probably be higher, but we're going to let the money dictate it. We're probably one of the highest in town, to be honest. I think I'm looking at a couple of other lines, and they're all at either 22 or 22.5. So we are higher than the norm.
So I don't know. Does that mean, like, people actually think UNLV might cover a 22, 23-point spread against Boise State?
Only some of the kind of people that make a living betting sports, and they don't necessarily watch games. They keep track of statistics, kind of like an insurance actuary would kind of just chart statistics and say, in this position, you have to take 23 points at home. But the ticket count is about 10-1 Boise to UNLV. So far more people are laying the points with Boise, thinking it's going to be a blowout, and then you have just those very, very few people that put up a couple thousand dollars on UNLV.
Big picture for college football and the futures odds. When Clemson has a close game against North Carolina, do you guys downgrade their title odds at all?
No, we don't. And Clemson is known for having a scare every year and losing, you know, one game a couple years ago. I think it was Syracuse, and then Pittsburgh the next year. And I think this was their game. So even though they were huge favorites and were expected to just blow this team out, you know, we're not going to get caught jacking up the line on Clemson only to get buried on it. We've fallen into that trap before with injuries. You know, when a quarterback goes out, the favorite goes from 3-1 up to 8-1, and then they end up winning the national championship with a backup quarterback. So we're careful not to do that too much, but we still think it's kind of a probably 4 or 5 horse race now with Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, LSU, and Ohio State.
Well, he is Bob Scucci with Boyd Gaming. Bob, as always, we appreciate the time.
Thanks
for having me.
So there you go. Only 23 for Boise State. That is shocking. All right, we're going to come back. I've got a fun segment for you. Nothing to do with the Golden Knights or UNLV or Raiders. It's a fun segment.
Are you going to do the read that we talked about?
I told you I was going to do the Start the Force segment. Pay attention sometimes.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Tyler Bischoff is
technically correct. The best kind of correct.
Cofield and Company is at Silver Sevens, right next to the William Hill Race and Sportsbook today. They are on from 3 to 5 before they throw it to Thursday Night Football. So if you're looking for a place to watch Thursday Night Football, head down to Silver Sevens. You can see Steve Cofield and Cofield and Company. I don't know who's going to be with him. I never know who is. But
I mean, if you see a tall, skinny guy that they keep referring to as Adam, he'll hug you. Just go up and hug him.
Adam Candy will hug you back?
I'd say give it a shot.
Go for it. So, I'm stealing an idea here from Katie Nolan of ESPN. She did a segment where they read bad reviews of sports venues. So I went to Yelp and found the worst reviews for these sports arenas and stadiums in Las Vegas. And some of these are wonderful. Some of them have nothing to do with sports because like T-Mobile hosts a lot of concerts. So we'll start with one from T-Mobile. Jeanette. The artist is great. The seating sucks. If the rude people want to stand while everyone else is sitting, you can't see anything. Even after kindly asking the children to sit, they stood and flipped us off. This will be the last concert we attended here.
Maybe you're a little too old to go to that concert then.
Yeah, I don't understand the idea of telling people to sit down at a concert.
Like, it's a concert.
Right? It's very strange to me. Very, very strange to me. Another one. This from KJV on T-Mobile Arena. Very stark and unfinished looking. Empty concrete walls everywhere. And it has a feeling of being in a warehouse. Not what I expected at all from what I've heard. I guess these fans have never been to other hockey arenas, so they don't know any difference. Crowd noise is pumped in. Visiting fans outnumber the home team. Cheesy medieval time themes. It feels like a jousting match will take place between periods. Side note, great idea.
Actually, I'm kind of for it. Can we get it on the Zambonis?
Yes. Fake castle backdrops that are humorous. At times, I thought I was in the Excalibur. I get that it's Vegas and they want to add a snow along with the game, but it's not needed. Keep hockey and keep the Excalibur theme to the Excalibur.
Okay, that guy can get right the hell out.
Right? Terrible.
He can literally get right the hell
terrible
out.
Terrible idea.
Don't come to our stadium.
Terrible. All right. Here's one from Sam Boyd Stadium. Some of the Sam Boyd ones are very old. Jake
W.
said...
Sam Boyd. Very old.
Jake W. said, maybe I'm spoiled with the Rose Bowl, but what a dump.
Oh, come on!
To start, the bathrooms suck and have a really strong scent of urine. Also, the Rebels suck, but we already knew that. Also, the concourse is very hot and is even hotter than outside. Make your trips in here short. The bleachers suck and are uncomfortable. Also, UNLV is too cheap to give away good prizes to fans. They were doing a segment, if you throw a football in the back of the Tundra. Turns out the fan didn't get the truck, but got a free car wash. They were giving out refrigerator magnets as a promotion, so that was cool. I probably won't come back.
4 stars.
I actually think, and again, I can't remember how old this one was, but he's got a valid point. If you're bringing out a truck and you're like, hey, throw this in the back of the truck, you should get the truck. You shouldn't get a car wash.
Yeah.
If you're going to bring out a prop, you got to give away the prop.
Or give away a prop of similar value.
Yeah, like Lights FC, they're giving away a truck. And all year they bring people out and they're like, all right, you got to kick the ball into the truck and then you'll get a chance in the last home game to come back and win the truck. Which I guess you'd rather have a car wash than just a chance to win. But at least they're going to give away the truck at some point. So Jake's got a point there. But we've got more of these to read throughout the time whenever I don't have enough content for a show.
Tell Jared to shut his yap and concentrate on the show.